Miss Ellis. Miss Ellis.
So I don't hear the broke.
Miss Ellis, you know that all the government workers, including the former secretary and prime minister, and the pensioners and all that, you know that the money that's going to put on the water bill and the airline, the tourists and etc., you believe that money will be available between now and Christmas?
Why can't some of it be available between now and Christmas?
We already had an estimate for the year running to March next year. Some of the money the government is going to capture now with the new taxes that they're implementing, you can't put that to pay the 10 extra ministers and the non-country. That money can't come in time to pay those wages and the pensions. That money had to be there in somewhere. The money that, you see, the
150. But you see, your argument is...
The 150 on...
But your argument is flawed in this way.
Let me hear.
You can't... I do not know that there has been anybody in the Ministry of Finance who has used the language that you have used to characterize where we are. That is, that the country is broke. This is the center of all that you are saying.
Because
the country is broke, and therefore, if the country was broke, you could not do those things.
Mr. Ellis, I ain't only hear the country is broke.
Who said it?
I was told, I'm hearing people saying it to me directly.
You mean people on the street?
Wait, Mr. Ellis.
Which minister said that?
Listen a minute, Mr. Ellis. I'm hearing it directly from persons.
Like who?
Saying to me, all of you party, carry all the money, and now we got to pay more for waterworks and things like that, because that is the message that is being sent.
But that doesn't mean that you're broke. It just means that too much of the money has been spirited away and it makes it more difficult. But you see, you are moving from that to you are broke.
You're trying to be technical with that.
No. Because if we accept your premise that the country is broke, then it says it has absolutely no money. And how then can it do this and how can it do that? I don't hear that. I hear that it has been made far more difficult by the way that things have been run.
The impression that I'm getting, that when the government changed, they leave the country in such a state, that here it is now, this government got to come and save it. But as they're saving it, they're increasing even their own money. The prime minister getting $800 more. Okay, you have the pensioners getting more. More money going to the university. More money going on.
But I've already given you the argument
that
for whatever they are getting, the taxation system is taking more money from people. Your disposable income and their disposable income, assuming that that's the only money they're getting, you know, is being depleted. And the overall impact of it is that life is going to be made a bit more difficult because your disposable income is contracting. No, the difference between what they're doing and what was done before is that by contracting the disposable income, they are also trying to reach a particular threshold where the relationship, the negotiation with the IMF will then allow them to get the necessary funding and the discipline that is required to take the country forward to bring about growth eventually, rather than just taxing for the sake of trying to run things on your own. That's the difference. Down to brass tacks. This person has raised a query about what's happening with money that is owed to people who invigilated the CXC and CAPE exams in the middle of June. She says that they haven't been paid yet. And when they call, they're being told that the money is not yet ready. She wants to know whether they will have to wait until November, as happened last year, and concludes by saying it is unfair that for the exam period May and June, you have to find your own money to get to work for approximately 5 to 6 weeks and then have to wait so long to be paid. So the Ministry of Education should let people like that know what is the situation, how soon they are going to be paid for the work that they did in that period. Down to Brass Tacks, hello.
Hello, Ms. Ellis.
Hi.
I have a few points here to make.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't get in on the program yesterday, so I'm talking about the point of the criticalness of the tourism.
The cruise tourism situation.
Yeah, I have said already that we should make Bridgetown a pedestrian city and have, like, cafes on the sidewalk, and at night you could get the buggies and take the tourists through the city for rides, or even have some of our bands or so parading the street or something. Secondly, I find that we do not act. I heard a gentleman from Bahamas speaking about the interaction between the tourists and the Bahamians by home visits and so on. And way back when an eminent cricketer was the Minister of Tourism, I asked him to do a little program called Meet the Barbadian, where people of similar hobbies and likes could somehow meet together, have a cup of tea, or if we could afford lunch or dinner, and that way integrate with the visitors. I also spoke about the necessity of developing whole town and carrying the small cruise lines down there, because they're getting bigger and bigger, and the smaller cruise lines are still en route. So we could develop whole town for that. I said it a long time ago. I think I heard a minister saying that they will develop whole town and spice town as well. But
we need
our land-based attractions also to escalate, to improve on them and to do more. We lack land-based attractions.
Well, you know full well that this is an area that is not lacking because of the absence of study. There are so many studies that have been done on this area. But here in Barbados, one of the points that I would draw to your attention is this. One study says that the master plan identified actions that would enhance the competitiveness of the cruise sector, with implementation timelines between 2014 and 2018. There, at the time, was little progress toward the articulated goals. Moreover, a repeated theme of interviews with stakeholders is that top-down implementation and vision for the industry could be enhanced. We have the attitude which says, look, let's do as many studies as we possibly can, and then take the documents and put them on the shelf.
That's the usual practice.
And just cannot get anything done. That's one of the reasons why people are a little wary of the new commission. I hope that the points which have been made about this new tourism commission would take it more in the direction of implementing rather than trying to establish what is wrong, because
we
already have had so much of that we are going nowhere. The port, the Bridgetown port, we talk about.
They should have some kind of greenery.
Well, the point that was made here is that the Bridgetown port, which opened in 1961, has both functional and aesthetic limitations.
Right.
And therefore, the idea of doing something brand new and big in the Bridgetown port is considered relevant, necessary.
Right.
You heard the guy yesterday talk about the fact that in other places, locals and the visitors mix in the port. Here in Barbados, you're trying your best to protect that large number of people who've been given taxi licenses so that they are able to take people on an island tour rather than confine the activity as much as possible to the port and Bridgetown and its environs.
Right.
All right. So all of that. Pardon?
No, we're saying, for instance, when we have the police band, we could play or expose them when these large ships enter the port. And this may sound facetious, but when I was a boy, they had a police with an umbrella over the side of the corner there by the Costa, directing traffic. And that used to catch the eyes of a lot of visitors. Even something as far back as that can be used to find other ideas to attract tourists.
Well, we have enough specialists in this field who have gone out there and interviewed so many people. They know the answers. It is about trying to get some action on these particular items.
Yeah.
All right? And there is, I suspect that some of it is also linked to the whole question, too, of the vision of the people who are the decision makers and some of the wheeling and dealing that goes on to determine who is going to do what. That, too, has become a factor in trying to get action in Barbados. And we be encouraged to hear what is being said right now, and I hope that it is not mere talk, because, you know, talk cheap. You can say what you want
That's
to say,
right.
But you got to keep your eyes on the ball. Yes, yes, yes. All right. I mean, we talk or two. I was looking up some information on what is happening internationally. The Caribbean has this notion that it is so prized and that sort of thing. But you know that there is an increase and a projected increase in the number of cruise tourism, the tourists rather, who are going to colder climes as well. I mean, even here for the Caribbean, people are looking more and more to go out to Alaska and those places. And then there's something else that is developing, river cruises. Maybe people go up the Danube and that sort of thing, you know. So, I mean, the competition is particularly fierce and growing in those areas, and you just got to stay on top of it, down to brass tacks. So I just want to ask you all who are calling to bear in mind, Dennis Johnson is the producer and the operator, and he is taking the calls. And right now we remain in the same studio. So when he takes the calls and you engage him in a long conversation, it is disruptive, because what is happening is that if you listen carefully, you can sometimes hear that he is involved in a conversation with somebody else. So we want to keep those conversations to a minimum so that, we want to avoid them as much as possible until we can adjust things to suit. Okay? Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Good morning. It's 11:47.
Sorry. Good morning.
11:47.
Today, most of us who are all retired and live in this little cul-de-sac got our water bills.
Yes.
And, of course, they were doubled to what we normally pay. And the consensus is, surely, if you're retired, you know the government needs the money. We know that there is a shortage and whatever and whatever. But surely, if we are all on fixed salaries, fixed pensions, that there should be a consensus of saying, well, a sort of tax for seniors. Because all of us have worked hard, and we just don't have. So my water bill has gone from $48 to $88.50. And my pension is the same. And when you go down the road to the supermarket, everything has gone up in price. And they tell me the light bill is going to go up. So how do senior citizens manage? How do they live? I mean, there's nothing wrong in paying more if you're earning more. But if you're on a fixed income, it's just impossible.
You know, I've been speaking a bit about what you can anticipate. And this, from where I sit, is part of the great challenge that we face today. When Greece was going through its problems, we tried as much as we possibly could to share with you what happened there.
That's right.
And, you know, people in Greece, they went out and they protested and that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, they had to endure it.
Marching and protesting only brings more aggravation in the society. It doesn't heal, and it more destroys. And I don't believe in doing things just for the sake of doing it.
But how would you then suggest that the government deals with the problem that you have raised with us? As a pensioner on a fixed income, recognizing that all these things are going to go up in price and that your life is going to be made more difficult. You will have less disposable income, if you have any at all. Those people who have limited or no disposable income are the ones that are going to be under greater pressure. And I know a lot of people who are elderly Barbadians living on pensions. They live alone. Not only that, there are some people who take their pensions and they claim that they're changing the checks and that sort of thing, and they hold on to some of the money, sometimes all of the money.
Well, I certainly live alone, and in my cul-de-sac, I'm the only one who still has a chattel house. Everyone made bungalows, but I liked it, and I couldn't afford to do anything, and I've kept it. But it doesn't make any sense. I asked the lady in the waterworks, I said, does this mean that I can have a swimming pool or a fountain because I'm paying for more water, which I'm not using? And she said, no, the government needs the money. And so everybody is being taxed. It's a flat rate.
Yes.
And that's how it is.
And you would prefer one that kind of discriminated,
like a means
in favor of. A means test?
Yeah. To say, as they do with your land tax. You know, they assess how much land you have, what quality house you have, blah, 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 and then they give you the land tax bill. But, of course, this now is a necessity, and it has to be paid. And then people who drive cars, I don't, say they're paying more money than if they paid for their car tax or their land
That's
tax
correct.
Or their road tax.
That's correct.
So, therefore, the government cannot be broke, because it means if you're paying in this money, because if you don't pay it, you'll get locked up or you'll get in trouble or whatever will
happen. What do you see as the end result? I mean, this is only, as I said just now, only the beginning of the effort to satisfy the International Monetary Fund requirement. So in those circumstances, therefore, what you have to anticipate is that your lifestyle is going to be changed.
Completely.
That's what it means.
Completely.
So the key right now is to start looking down the road at the things that you may have to do without, if you can, because as a pensioner, for instance, you may find that that's quite limited. I mean, I think that one of the things that should be addressed right now is the extent to which pensioners have to pay taxes on their pensions. You know, that I think that I haven't heard much discussion coming from the government about that, but I think we have to go to the regional roundup, and after that we'll come right back to this edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Thank you for calling, ma'am. Somebody sent me a message here to point out that pensioners are to receive a 50% rebate on the GSE that has been noted in the water bills. But you'll have to spell out, the government will have to spell out for people exactly how they will go about trying to get that rebate. I think there's obviously a situation where some people are unaware of it, and I'd like as much information as possible. What I would really want to encourage where we can is that people who are working in the various government departments and are privy to this kind of information should feel free to share that information with us. And sometimes you don't even have to come on air to share it. You just send your information to us, and we will share it for you. There are times, of course, when it's necessary to come and explain something. But a critical part of the whole process of sharing information with the public is being responsive to the public need. And while the government has done a lot of work so far in having the Prime Minister communicate directly with people via Facebook and the social media. I think what I see is a need to strengthen that flow of information on things that people may have queries about. Welcome to the program. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? You're on the air? 434-1790. Somebody else is saying here that their water bill is three times the amount of their neighbors. And these are neighbors that have improved value of their homes. Hello, yes.
Yes, sir. I'm calling in connection with the water race that's been people have been talking about now.
Yes.
The $45 is for garbage and sewage.
That's correct.
And I hear people talking about pensions, and their pensions are not being increased. The pensions were increased. They were getting a little bit of money, now they're getting more. And the $45 only per month, they are getting some people getting over nearly $900 a month.
You mean in pension?
Yeah, in pension, yes.
And some people are not.
And some people are getting more.
And some people are not. And you run a dangerous risk of lumping everybody together. Some people are would have a difficult time. Let's be realistic about it. Huh? The most important part of this is to be able to establish that the government is not insensitive to the fact that pensioners will be hard hit, and that it is providing that rebate, that 50% rebate. What's important now is for people to be able to find out exactly what is the process for getting the rebate.
Yes, you should know what category you're in because
there are people who will find difficulty. And I will say this to you. The stark reality is that what the government is doing will not be enough for some people. There are people who will be under severe pressure. And this society now has to look at what are the best mechanisms available to us to assist. This is where the church and other organizations need to be involved in the planning process. For instance, I'll give you an example of something that has come to me. The people at the Eagle Hall Primary School, they are looking for something like $8,000 to help repaint the school, the exterior of this school. The government does not have the resources, and the private sector that they have turned to, those private sector interests that they have turned to, have not been able to give them the kind of support that they require. Because, you know, private sector, they're getting these requests left, right, and center. And therefore, even in a situation such as this one, there is a need now for people who have been to school there to find a way of trying to make a contribution.
Hello?
Are you hearing me?
Hello?
I'm hearing you. Can you hear me? I think you've been cut off. Not by us, though.
I'm still here.
Yes. So
yes.
That is the reality that you face at the individual level and even within some of these state-owned enterprises and state-owned entities.
Yes, I understand that is the problem that we have.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and we have to really sit down and analyze carefully what we have, what we want to achieve in the long run. But we should look at how we can help Barbados. It is our country.
We agree.
Barbados country, and we have to. I know it's going to be difficult. It's going to be very difficult because I'm also on disability.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I have prepared my. When I heard what was coming, I said, "Now what do I do? Do I go and buy lamb or do I buy sardines?" And I'm not going to buy lamb every week. I will buy sardines every other week, so that I can help myself and also help my country. Because in the long run, it is our country, and our families has to come up through it. And we don't know what is going to happen later on.
So in real terms, how have you adjusted so far?
Well, I have adjusted. I have cut back on a lot of things that I would buy.
A lot? Like what?
Yeah, various things. Like I wouldn't go to the fast food things.
You
that
live
often.
Alone?
No.
Because when you live alone or if you have to feed just one or two people, it's sometimes cheaper to eat out than to eat in, you know. It's all well and good, because sometimes if you decide that you're going to cook a soup, let me tell you, that soup can cost you more unless you cook it for two or three days. But
let me give you a secret. I don't live alone.
Right.
But I'm the breadwinner.
Correct.
And I cook for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people.
Right. Well, it makes sense for you to go and cook. There's no doubt about that.
Right. I cook for 5 people.
Yeah.
And first of all, I enjoy cooking.
Yeah.
And I just calculate what I'm going to cook and how I'm going to, what I'm going to do. And I recognize that, you know, you can, so you budget your plan your monies properly.
So let me hear you. Let me hear how you budget to cook for a week. How has that changed? I mean, when I was growing up as a child, I knew Barbadians used to cook. You could tell what they were going to cook on a Monday,
mm-hmm.
on a Tuesday, right down.
Yeah, I still do that.
So how has that changed?
It hasn't changed that much, you know. It hasn't changed that much.
So you cook every day?
Almost every day.
Almost.
The only day I don't cook is on
Monday.
On Sunday, I will leave the for Monday. But other than that, so I, you know, cook every day after that. So cuckoo, rice, the rice, I cook rice Sunday and Monday. I don't cook rice not until maybe next Sunday again. But I variate my food in between there. I would get like a breadfruit also in between there, and that way do. I soup one day, and you know, you use the soup and everything.
You cook for 5 people, right?
Yeah.
All of those people eat that food? Because you know these young people today.
Yeah, well, my choice is that I cook it. If you don't want to eat it, you go get your own.
And do they? Because you might not go to the fast food, but these young people will find themselves at the fast food. You say, but look, I put all of my effort into cooking a wholesome meal, and look at that.
Yes. But see, if they go and buy fast food, it's their money.
Yeah.
It's their money, you know. But, you know, I would not be giving them the money to go and buy the fast food. The food is here. You eat what it is. And that is how we...
Cutting and contriving when it comes to cooking is the issue, though. And this is something that many people will face in these tougher times. So how do you cut and contrive in that regard? I mean, when I grew up, my mother used to do it by, she had a small amount of meat. So what she would do is that she would pelt some white potatoes inside there,
yes.
and some macaroni.
Yeah.
Or she would take something like, you can take something like eggplant,
yeah,
gets the flavor and it spreads it out. But of course, the older you get, today I know that I shouldn't be eating macaroni and I can't be eating white potatoes. So
mm-hmm.
I got to find, you know, how do you then go about trying to spread it, especially if you got so many mouths to feed?
Well, you get some vegetables and you use the vegetables in between that, yes, so. And you use like macaroni and vegetables. And, you know, a good thing that a lot of people don't use, you see, you have to, it's even a company old school, it helps you. Because you can use, you can make egg gravy. And a lot of people don't want to use that. You see, that is where you have to contrive in this part of the world.
Mm.
But
there's another dimension to eating that we need to take very seriously, huh?
Mm-hmm.
There is a growing movement against eating red meat.
Mm-hmm.
That movement says that the increased use of red meat is predisposing more people to cancer.
Mm-hmm.
We talk here about things like that, and somebody sent me some information here just now talking about cancer, in which I'll find exactly what they were saying. But essentially what they're saying is that there is such a significant increase in the number of people who are suffering from cancer in the country. And that, internationally also, is helping to drive people in a direction where there is a lot of people are now vegan, they're
yeah.
more vegetarian mm-hmm. in their focus. And it is not necessarily more expensive, contrary to the view that some people express. It is not necessarily more expensive than eating meat. Meat is perhaps one of the more expensive items on the dish.
Yeah, but you can supplicate the meat with peas. But you also have to be careful, too, because everything these days is causing cancer. So for now, you can soon hear that the water got in some kind of chemical in it that caused cancer. Because here's it now, you're saying that you hear on how to say food from the States, how Roundup has leaked into the thing, and that certain amount of things in it. So we have to be careful because you don't know who is spraying your vegetables with what.
Yes.
And let you know, you will say everything having caused cancer. Even if you breathe the air, sometimes you say something in the atmosphere can give you cancer. So we have to, we have to really analyze for ourselves and have a physical checkup regularly, and you will know exactly how your body is. Because everything that everybody say must not be necessarily promoting health, but might be promoting not to buy a certain product. So we have to be careful on that end also. But I believe that if we Barbadians stick to what we have to do, we will get through. And if by December we don't see the garbage trucks or get our business getting cleaned up, then we can start to kick up about our water bill. And that is very safe and safe. Go from there.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your positive outlook on this whole matter. Thank you. Down to Brass Tacks.
Hi, Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Yeah, all right. You sound pretty good, so I want to ask you how you're doing. But I don't want to box with you for, or wrong, at least.
Okay.
You think you're ready?
Sure.
I want to say a few other things, too, but, it come across to me, Mr. Ellis, that you represent the station and you're moderators. You seem to do everything you can to shift any kind of backlash or criticism of this government. I don't think that one should go head over heels to criticize this government, a new government. But I think that there are things that are going on that one is not too comfortable with. I feel that you should be able to comfortably express your opinion about it.
And you're prevented from doing that?
Not necessarily, but what I find with your station, that in the case of the other government, you tended to deflect when people try to criticize the opposition, say things about the opposition, you try to deflect it to the government. When it's positive about the government, you try to push it, get the body off from the
government. Well, I have learned
positive to the last government and put it on the.
I have learned
and put it on to the opposition, right?
So, I can only deal with specifics. I can't deal with a general comment.
Well, yes, general, I agree, but I'm saying
I'm not interested in a general comment. I would prefer. I want you to tell me that on this specific point that we have been discussing, you have sought to be too defensive of the government. Let me hear what the point is, because I can also, in general terms, tell you that I've picked up your voice a long time ago, and you are described by some as an apologist for the Democratic Labour Party, too. Therefore, it is not going to be useful for the two of us to discuss it in those terms. Let me hear the specifics.
Yeah, well, you got apologists also. So anyhow, I ain't going to get into that. You whenever a couple of times so far in the program, and other times like you on the program also, when anyone,
my friend, I just told you that you're not going to take me anywhere by
let me tell you this program.
I want something specific.
Right. So you've had a lady calling not long ago.
Yes.
And she was telling you about the high cost of course, a living, then how she beginning to feel it.
Yes.
And I've heard you do it more than once, where you started to say, okay, if you think that this is bad, look at what's coming.
Yes.
Okay? Which is true. Look at what's coming.
So you complaining about that?
But I'm saying you seem not to want individuals to say what is affecting
On what basis could you come to that conclusion? That is absolute nonsense that you are talking. How can you move from that position to say you don't want people to talk about what's happening? That does not compute.
But how these things are affecting them? I'm talking about a number.
But what you are saying does not stand up to scrutiny, because I have said to somebody, look, as tough as you think it is right now, you better brace yourself for tougher times, because what we see unfolding before us suggests that you need to start planning for that now. That does not mean that your situation is not something that we take seriously. So I don't know where you're going with that. That's why I ask you. That's why I ask you to be specific. That is why I ask you to be specific rather than be generalized.
This government has gone helter-skelter, imposed a lot of new taxes on the country. We understand that we're in a difficult strait, and it's not one government. It's come 2 years. We've tried to live a life of champagne and tears from all before. We can't continue. I quite agree. But I have seen they have been too draconian, for lack of a better word, and trying to impose some of the new conditions that they are bringing to the country. And I wonder if they could not have sat back a little bit and move bit by bit and trying to do what they need to do. But putting all these things, the gas tax, the water bills, the whole caramba of stuff that they've done, bam, 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 and then you got some more drastic ones to come, as you keep saying, which is true. But how can you not say anything about this, you know, whether it's very difficult for individuals, consumers in this country relative to what's going on currently.
Who hasn't said anything about it?
I don't talk anything critical of the government. All you're saying is, well, accept it because it is the reality.
Let me give you my perspective on it. And I think I articulated that earlier. As I understand it, Barbados is about to get into a program with the International Monetary Fund. There is hardly any country that gets into a fund program that does not call for serious change. As I understand it, the government of Barbados has been as draconian as it has been because it is trying to meet the IMF dictate. Therefore, they're seeking to narrow this gap so that when you go to the IMF, you basically say, look, we know what you expect of us, and we've already done it. We have a homegrown program. That's what they're saying. And you may recall that the last government said that it had a homegrown program too. That the last government also imposed a number of measures that were part of that so-called homegrown program. What's left to be seen now is whether, in exchange for the program, we are going to get the assistance that is required. Right. Now, the other issue is, and if not the fund, where can you go? Can you tell me?
I am not sure where you can get such a large quantity of money from, other than IMF, you know.
If you know that the fund will ask certain things of you, would you not put them in place before, or would you wait to go to them and ask them and expect that they will tell you put them in place?
Well, I assess that they know what the IMF requires, and they have said about trying to do a few things. So
don't you think that is why they cannot be as slow as you want them to be? That they have to fast-track those things because you want to get it. Let me also put another thing to you. You have another issue facing you, and it is this. If we stay too long to get an IMF program, this period of uncertainty will not help us. So that may influence the decision to try to fast-track these tougher measures as well so that you can get the program in place much earlier.
You know, the Prime Minister said a couple of months back, almost 3 months, she said, after coming back from the IMF, she said, not exact words, but Barbados, we got it. You remember those words?
She said, Barbados, we got this. In other words, she was saying, look, we got this under control.
Right, okay.
Don't panic.
I got a feeling that was saying, well, we're going to get the money from the IMF. It's coming soon. Don't worry about it. That's what my impression. Now, to me, it's taken a little long so far.
Yeah, but how long does it normally take a country to get an IMF program? It takes months. It takes several months.
Given the scenario that what we are led to believe, it seems as though it would come a lot quicker. But
well,
I hope though that that the 1% that we were looking for doesn't change to 3 or 4% because of the default. You know, I hope that we really got this well. You know, because I am fearing as a Bajan looking to live, working little for honest dollar, that I might not be able to survive.
Well, I've had your pessimism, and the previous caller was optimistic. I have to work with both scenarios. So let's wait and see. This is Down to Brass Tacks.